Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Warius.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. It's the official show for the month of October 2022.
Indubitably.
So it's the spookiest show of the year. We got some new releases to talk about, as well as some games coming out in November that we'll mention. Some of the big stuff coming out in November, most notably Pokemon. We'll talk a little bit about that. Not really much in the way of news or new game announcements. One game announced, and I sent you guys a link, the wrong video, but it was in there anyway. One Last Breath, and I mentioned that one because it looks a lot like Inside, maybe a little bit derivative, but it's kind of got this kind of spooky, foreboding tone to it. Not much in the way of like very intricate gameplay. It looks like you're just kind of like walking around.
That was the one where they're just going from the left of the screen to the right, right? And they were on that bridge that collapsed, and it said... It was weird because it had like EVO, but the E was the other way.
Yeah.
I was all thrown off by that sign because something's off about this sign.
And it's supposed to be like this very ominous environment that you're in. Like a lot like something like Inside or Limbo, where the appeal of the game is like the creepiness of it.
See, I got that feel immediately, but I laughed hard in the beginning when I saw that video. The guys who are like walking on their hands with their feet out in front of them. Just the dumbest looking thing.
Like some Guillermo del Toro creature.
It's just the dumbest looking thing. I was like, I wouldn't be scared of that at all.
I don't know. I think if you ran into that in real life, you might be like, whoa, what's going on there?
What the fuck, man? You okay, dude?
But you know, it's a video game. There's no real danger.
No.
It's not going to kill you in real life.
No. It may.
That's all for really new game announcements.
Okay. Other than that, the other ones in that video were absolute shit.
We did get a release date update for Persona 3 and 4. They're both coming out on January 23rd. So there's that.
That's a bold move, releasing 5 before they release 3 and 4.
Right?
You know, you'd think people would want to know...
Kind of vamp up to it?
Yeah. You know, for the sake of a narrative, maybe they're trying to do some Memento-style storytelling.
Are they connected?
They're not.
I didn't think so.
Oh, perfect.
I thought it was going like a Final Fantasy kind of thing where they're
I just think it kind of would be funny if a series did that, where if they started with 4 and then they started working their way backwards.
That'd be interesting. Kind of like a Memento style.
Exactly.
I think it is also a bold move to release these both on the same day.
I mean, they're doing that with movies nowadays with all the prequels coming out, the movies and TV series, the Rings of Power.
That's because it's so hard to have an original idea.
It is.
It really is a struggle. Making games is easy. Having an original idea is hard.
It's true.
Yeah.
Nothing really in the way of news so much either. There were a couple of things that happened and... We'll spend as much time as you guys want to spend on it there. Did you guys see the thing about that Bayonetta voice actress?
I did, no. Yeah.
This sort of shit is the exact reason why we don't talk about news on every show, because there are a lot of discussions, and then when all the facts came out, there had to be a lot of backpedaling on a lot of people's parts. Those are basically what ends up happening, is this voice actress, whose name escapes me, presented this narrative that she is not going to be voicing the character of Bayonetta in the newest game coming out tomorrow, because basically claims she got lowballed, where she was offered $4,000 to do a voice acting gig and felt like she deserved a lot more money. And it turned into this whole like back and forth where, you know, one side was, she was saying one thing, Platinum Games was like, no, that's not true, that's not what happened. And some reporters over at Bloomberg, who are hopefully not using the same sources as their Switch Pro sources, because we know how that worked out. But pretty much like did some digging and found out that like the initial offer that Platinum Games had put forth to her is 3 or 4 sessions, which they'll typically last like a few hours, and you get like $3,000 or $4,000 per session. So kind of maxed out around $15,000 to do these.
A game that sells. I mean, it's Bayonetta. I don't know voice acting. I don't know what the going rate for a voice actor is.
You might want to pump the brakes and you want to talk about how much it sells, because
it is Bayonetta, but
it's C tier. Like, this is no brain age.
The voice actor is a brain age. Bang.
But basically, like, it is kind of a weird thing to think about, because, like, the three of us here, you know, If we do 4 hours of work, we're not getting $4,000. And sure, you're doing like four sessions and doing $3,000 to $4,000 per session.
Imagine if you're like a real estate agent, you know? It's like how it's a gig that you're doing, yeah. right? It's like yeah. how many of these performances are you going to do a year? And it's like, yeah, if you're only working, if that adds up to 10 hours of work and you made 15 grand, be happy about that.
Right.
But then just make sure that you do that at least a couple of times a year. I mean, yeah, that's your job.
And then that's
your job is not to work 10 hours a year.
Right. And that's the thing about gig work like that is yeah. you don't have the security of like, no, I make an hourly rate or I make a salary. I have an employer. You know, when you're self-employed like that, when you're a contract gig worker, the disadvantage is the insecurity of it.
Yeah, same thing. Again, like I was going to say, like a real estate broker, right? You have to continually make sales to justify your annual income if you're a broker. Like that's part of the job is selling. So, you know, not necessarily the exact same thing, but the same way with this. It's like, that's really good money to make if you can consistently get jobs doing that.
Yeah.
If that's your one shot at it, which it was not this woman's one shot at doing this. Obviously, she's done previous Bayonetta games and made pretty good money.
And the thing, one of the other things that came out was like, oh, what she wanted was six figures and residuals from game sales. She wouldn't have gotten much from residuals. But I don't know. It has...
For a game that has to be probably localized in multiple languages too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's like, even all of the sales that she gets, it's not even like it's going to just be her voice doing the character.
Six figures, that's ambitious.
Six figures is a lot.
Yeah.
Especially for a game like Bayonetta that is not moving millions upon millions. Maybe a million. Maybe two. I think two would be great.
Well, and then, I mean, I don't know if you want to push along the story as the narrative of this event, but the next thing that happened, as I recall, was people started accusing the person replacing them as being a scab worker. Like they were going against the union. Like this was anti-Teamster, anti-union bullshit. And they ended up replacing her. I don't know who her replacement was.
Jennifer Hale, who voiced Samus. Who's done
a million things. Yeah. Her CV is absolutely incredible as a voice actress. She's by no means, like, stealing this woman's job. Like, she was offered the same kind of gig that every other one doing this voice acting work is. So
after the original voice actress was offered something.
Declined it.
Yeah.
So
I really did not pay much attention to that side of it, like the fallout of this other voice actress catching shit. Anyone who gave Jennifer Hale shit for picking up work should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. What a piece of shit you have to feel like.
And again, that's how instantaneous this news cycle is. Because I feel like I saw this entire narrative arc over the course of like 48 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was real quick. This moved fast.
Yeah, it's like if someone loses a position at McDonald's and somebody else comes in and takes it. Is that guy a scab? Like, no, it's just a fucking... It's also McDonald's. I don't know why.
Yeah, the
this is a weird analogy. I'm trying to find an analogy here. It's not working. Screw what I was saying.
Okay. Again, there's just so much energy gets pumped into like the video game like news sphere to just make people mad.
Oh yeah, and it's always
it is so fucking toxic.
Everyone's it's the new thing. Everyone's gotta have the hot take, the instantaneous reaction, the instant like blast, like I know exactly what's going on here and here's my opinion on it. Mm-hmm. Turns out that things probably aren't exactly what they seem like.
Yeah.
So eventually after a lot of this went around, the original voice actress, whose name I still can't remember, did come out and say like, oh yes, I was offered pretty much what we said, these sessions, this amount of money, I declined, wanted more. And then they offered a cameo role, which would have just been one voice recording session, which probably would have been the $4,000, which was what she initially led with. Like, this was an insulting offer. They offer me one session for $4,000. I deserve a lot more than that. It's like, you were initially offered more than that. And a lot of the backpedaling has been around, like, well, this has at least sparked a conversation about how much voice actors should be paid. Has it? Yeah. I don't know. And I'm not a voice actor. I'm not privy to a lot of voice actor like information. I'm not inside that sphere. $15,000 for 10 to 12 hours of work, I think that sounds totally fair.
Yeah. And again, this is, like you're saying, this is a Bayonetta game. This is not like the most high profile.
It's gonna be based on the game. Like if somebody like voices somebody in World of Warcraft, I mean that's gonna be a little different when there's like millions of people rabbing this thing.
Sure.
But yeah. I have no idea what voice actors would get paid. Yeah.
At least $4,000 sometimes.
Yeah. I mean I'd take it. I don't know if people want to listen to my voice constantly. I don't know why people are listening to this right now, but...
Well, we mute your parts.
Oh, okay. So it's just weird silences when you're responding to...
Yeah, somebody's going to hear me say, we mute your parts. Like, oh, there's someone else talking? But yeah. The other thing that was... You guys remember there was that contract worker who... I ended up bringing a lawsuit against Nintendo and specifically against a hiring contractor that Nintendo uses because of sort of a malicious workplace practices, specifically like anti-union stuff that they claim Nintendo was doing, like harassment that was happening with them. This was several months ago. There was a resolution. The hiring firm that Nintendo used to get their contract workers ended up settling out of court for about $25,000.
That's barely anything. They probably paid the lawyers 10 times that.
Right. The hiring company. And, you know, of course, the clickbait headlines were, oh, Nintendo settles. Well, it wasn't Nintendo who ended up settling. Nintendo did put out a statement saying that they were going to work to foster a better work environment. And, of course, like the conversation is about, you know... big bad corporations being anti-union and being on the side of labor, which, you know, I think everyone can agree it's better to be on the side of working people than giant corporations, and Nintendo's a big corporation. If Nintendo is doing things that would prevent people from unionizing, I think they should stop that.
Except our sponsor, Amazon.
Best website in the world.
Yes.
You can't get finer
put
products.
Put your heel on the throat of the working man, Amazon.
Send all the workers to space. That's where they belong anyway.
All right.
It's
we're shippers on the moon.
you have to have a harpoon to defend against the space whales.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Like, there's labor conversation conducted by talking heads on the internet who really don't know fuck all about it, but how. Giant corporations keep the working men down by being anti-union. Giant corporations are always going to be anti-union because it puts more power into the hands of labor rather than management. Your beef is not with giant corporations. It's with the state and local governments where you live because they have most of the power when it comes to like fostering an environment that's friendly toward unions. If you worked at a giant company, maybe whose mascot was a mouse in the state of Florida, and they are engaging in union-busting practices, your complaint wouldn't be with that company. Your complaint is with the state of Florida, who is very union-unfriendly. And I think what people discount is, like, we have the power to change that sort of thing. If you live in the state of Washington and have a problem with Nintendo's union practices... elect more officials who are more union-friendly. We're a self-governing nation. You have the power to do so.
Well, to use a played-out expression, right? It's like, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah.
Right? They're not doing anything that any other company's not... it wouldn't be doing in their position.
And I don't like that any particular company uses contract workers. I don't look fairly upon contract work in general. But... it's legal. It doesn't have to be. The Biden administration is changing some labor rules that will have some pretty drastic effects on things like DoorDash or Uber Eats because they're considered contractors and they're trying to change labor rules to where they would have to be considered employees, which would make them eligible for, you know, a wage and benefits. So there are things that you can do through the collective power of government. It's not like individual versus corporations. Like we are the government as people who engage in civics.
Mm-hmm. So games.
So video games. That's your life lesson for the day. Don't like labor laws? You can change them.
And by the way, you get the opportunity to do so in about 10 days.
Yep.
Right.
You guys got your mail-in ballots? I got mine.
Yep. I've been to vote in person.
Okay.
I live a few blocks away from the polling station, so I don't mind walking in there. They already sent me the sample ballots. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, new games, new releases. We got a bunch of games. October was a pretty busy month. all things considered. I'll go through the list and we will stop where appropriate. Overwatch 2. Do you guys like the Overwatches? Is that a game you talked about before? Or is that Borderlands?
Yeah, I played it. I like them. Yeah, I haven't played it in quite a long time. Probably, honestly, a year. But I really liked the original Overwatch quite a bit. It was fun.
Now you can play the new one on Switch, and it's free.
Yeah, if you like the first one, you're going to like the second one. Not much has changed.
Yeah,
it's basically the same game.
That's the punchline I've heard, is that they really didn't do much.
They added some new maps. There's a few new characters.
Wasn't that kind of the case with like Destiny and Destiny 2? And like all three of the Splatoon games are fairly similar.
It's, it's a little different. People are really bitching about it being essentially the same game and everything like that.
People are complaining on the internet.
People are constantly bitching. They got problems. But it's free to play. Like, calm the fuck down. It's free to play.
Also, it's not forced to play.
Who cares?
You can skip it.
Like, you don't need to if you're upset that it's essentially the same game. It's free.
But you don't get to engage in the dialogue if you're not playing it, Wes.
And all your shit from your account carries over. Like, I logged into the Overwatch 2 on my PlayStation. I've only ever played it on my PC. But I downloaded it from my PlayStation and logged in. I got all my skins and shit from the first one. I was like, all right, that's cool.
That's pretty nice.
I can just keep going. Let's go.
Yeah.
It turns out I suck at that game.
But you give it your the West stamp of approval.
Who'd you like Overwatch 2?
I really enjoy Junkrat.
Junkrat is a lot of fun.
Junkrat's my guy.
Yeah, the grenades are pretty fantastic.
Because I don't really need to aim a whole lot.
Yeah.
And that's what about shooters I'm really bad at is aiming.
Oh. Yeah.
I can't aim for I'm
bad at the aiming and the shooting.
Exactly.
Those are the only things about
like,
shooters.
When you play characters that are like Soldier 76, where you need to actually like keep a cursor on them and keep like a good solid stream of bullets in order to get them down. Mm-hmm. I got no hope in that. Like I'm gonna one every 10 bullets right hitting that guy. Like I'm hopeless. But Junkrat, I can just lob down in a hallway and just hope like it's gonna be okay.
Nice. Yeah, I actually liked McCree a lot. McCree was fun. I like what is the little dwarf guy that made the turret? He was really fun.
Torbjorn?
Yeah, Torbjorn. I liked him.
Yeah.
He's fun. I liked Pharaoh. Is that her? Pharaoh?
Pharaoh. Yeah. The one that flies up and does everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I just felt like you were playing Rocket Arena the whole time with her.
There's another one that's similar to that, a new one called Echo, but she came out in the first Overwatch just later in it. Ooh, she has some kind of like flight as well to it, and she's interesting.
I liked 76. He's just kind of a little of everything. He's kind of like a kind of a B, B minus at everything. I feel like he's
76 is just right pretty down the middle. Solid. I like him.
Oh, and Reinhardt. Reinhardt was like for real.
For a while, I was pretty much just Reinhardt because I can't aim. Yeah. So I it's always like, I can swing a hammer at people. I could do that.
I mean, yeah. I really liked how they, you know, it is a first person shooter, but it doesn't feel like you're playing like a modern warfare game or something where it needs to be a tactical like mouse and keyboard kind of one. You can very much feel the different play styles of the characters.
They added some PvE gameplay where you're just kind of like
honestly I prefer that. I really the PvP stuff is I don't know.
Well, you get like people are just playing all day every day and just stomp you in the face and you're just like, all right, well that was fun. Like
that was fun losing.
Those Widowmakers, like you just look down the scope for like half a second and get you right in the face. You're like, all right, like
well, it's also one of those games where you kind of need team balance. Mm-hmm. You know, you need different roles, and nobody, you know, you get the scenario where nobody wants to be the healer.
Well, in this one, you pick. So you before you queue up, you select what role you want to do, and they have two tanks, one tank. Yeah, I think it's one tank, two damage, and two healers. Mm-hmm. And you're locked into only picking those champs if that's a role you selected.
Yeah. So you probably queue faster team, if you want to.
Yeah. So they force team synergy a little bit.
They force team synergy.
They force synergy.
Amazing. I'd be your guys' healer.
Aww. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Anything else about Overwatch 2?
No, I mean, cool. It's more Overwatch. Come on, just play. It's free.
That was out on the 4th. I don't remember if I mentioned that or not. Nier Automata was out on the 6th. I talked a bit about that one on the mini show. I don't know that I have too much to add. I did have a fun experience. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but I was just kind of scrolling. I was scrolling through YouTube, and one of the recommended videos was a little 40 second video, and that from some schmuck who like 40 subscribers, and it was this video for Nier Automata, and it was just when I realized Nier Automata was a masterpiece. I was like, all right, this guy looks like he might have something cool to say about this. So I hit play, and it was just a video did like a 360 camera pan around the character, and then started running in between two big dilapidated buildings, and the music swelled really loud, and the music, and then the video ended. Like, oh, that's all it takes for you to consider a game a masterpiece? Is you tilt the joystick forward and run, and there's some music? Because, like, those buildings on the other side of you that you're so impressed by, you don't do anything with those buildings. They're just there. If you try to, like, go up to them and go inside, you can't. If you're trying to find a way to climb up them, you can't. There's no, like, interaction with anything that you just showed. People you could have easily just have been watching a video.
People are obsessed with this game.
Now, don't get me wrong.
I want to play it. I'm on board. Like, I would like to borrow your PlayStation copy, not your Switch copy.
What's wrong with this? There's nothing wrong with the Switch copy.
Sure.
There's nothing wrong with the Switch copy.
Okay.
And I'll have you know.
Can I borrow your PlayStation copy?
Yeah, that's fine.
He's using that tone that leads me to believe that something is wrong with the Switch copy.
It's cursed. It's fucking cursed.
You're telling me that it's slightly, it's not. I don't know. I forget.
Oh, the texture pop.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's fine.
Yeah.
In some places, the frame rate's actually better than the PS4 version.
Oh, is it now?
Yeah. But that's neither here nor there, because, like, I think that it's really misguided to say, like, this game is a masterpiece because I ran through some pretty scenery and music got loud. Where I think Nier Automata really succeeds, where this is a really good game, is, I suppose, spoilers. At this point on for Nier Automata, you play through the game. You play as the 2B character, and I think I mentioned this before. Then you kind of play through the B side as this character 9S, and you play through the same segment of the narrative, but the characters they play differently, and there are a couple of story segments where they split apart and you follow the opposite character as opposed to the one you started as. Then once you finish that sort of B side, you're able to start the credits roll, you're able to start the game again, but instead of like starting over from where you the initial beginning of the game, you actually pick up from where those first two acts start, or from where they left off, and you can play as this new character A2, and then you actually get like this whole like third act of the game. And there are points where you're able to swap between A2 and another character from earlier in the game. And again, they play differently. And then when you get to like the final gauntlet, there's this boss fight. And basically the two characters that you're playing as are fighting this boss at the same time. And they one of them is like a scrolling shooter, like you're in a ship and you're shooting as you would in like a Gradius or an R-type. And then the other side of it is you're playing as just like an action game, like your Bayonetta, your God of War, your sort of action character action game. And the further you get into this fight, the more rapidly it switches back and forth between the two. Mm-hmm. Until you get to a point where like you see it switch, and then just automatically you just got the muscle memory, like, okay, now I'm playing a shooter. Switch, okay, now I'm playing an action game. And the game does such a good job of transitioning you from all these different gameplay styles throughout the entire game, that by the time you get to the final challenge, like, nope, I'm totally prepared for this. And that's where I think this game is really good, is the fact that it takes all these different types of gameplay mechanics, throws them all together, and it works to where you have all these different, not wildly different, but different control schemes, different modes of play just assigned to muscle memory. It's really good. And there's some pretty music and dilapidated scenery, if that's what you're into.
There's buildings
that you can't do anything with.
A lot of sand.
Yep. There's lots of things you can like collect and upgrade. There's a lot of different types of weapons. Well, I say there's different types. There's a lot of different weapons. There's like swords, bigger swords, spears.
Bigger spears.
Bigger spears. Barehanded like fists.
Not the size of the spear that matters.
Bigger fists. End of list. But it's real good. I think I cleared through the three main story arcs in just under 34 hours, so it's not a super long game.
Oh yeah, that's nice.
And there's a ton of different endings that you can then go back and like collect if you want to do that sort of thing. But you know, each time you're like playing through the game, it's a little bit shorter. You're able to get through a little bit quicker. Oh, and all of your side quest progress carries over. So if you finish like a third of the side quests in the first run through, you won't have to do them again. It's pretty nice. And of course, all of like your it's a new game plus, all of your weapon progression and all the things you collect carry over too. But yeah. Anybody get No Man's Sky on Switch?
No.
I did not.
Moving right along then. A Plague Tale Requiem, a cloud version, not the only cloud game we're going to be talking about, but that game came out as well. But Wes, what I really want to hear about is Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope.
Yeah.
That came out on the 20th, and I you have it.
I did. I bought it.
You own this game.
I play it.
You have finished it.
No, I haven't
finished. Oh, okay. I thought we had a lot of momentum going there.
Yeah. You set me up for failure right
there. Go on. Tell us about Mario plus Rabbids.
Well, those listening who have not played a Mario and Rabbid game, it's like a Fire Emblem where it's just a turn-taking combat game. You have your different characters, and they do their own different things. There's not a whole lot I remember about the first Rabbids game. So this is where you and I are going to have to be like, was this a thing
We'll collaborate. It has been like 5 years.
Yeah, it's been a minute. But in this one, it's... you go into your battle sequences kind of like you would like a regular RPG where you run into the enemy and then you go into a battle sequence. It's not like when the first Mario & Rabbids game where it's pretty much was set combats.
Yeah, there was like a scripted zone.
There are scripted zones for combats as you're progressing through the game. In this one, you get little hub worlds and certain enemies are wandering around and you can crash into them to go into like a random encounter start a fight.
When you get into that random encounter, as it were, is like the zone of play reflective of where you encounter them, or does like
no, it's completely different zone.
Oh, interesting. So okay.
It's still in like the same kind of like theme and design of whatever world you're in, but it's completely different layout than where you are. You're actually going into a separate combat, and then you just pop right back out and off to your world. So it feels like you're kind of wandering around like a Mario Odyssey game, where you're wandering around the area, finding things and doing little side quests and stuff like that. But like the whole premise of the game is that there's this thing called Cursa, and it's like trying to get these sparks, which are the little stars from what game was it that had the Rosalina in
Galaxy.
Galaxy. Those stars from Galaxy, those little star, but they're rabbit forms. The lumens, the little rabbit forms of them. And so you're trying to like save them and stop Cursa, and there's like certain story objectives, like just random black puddles on the ground, and then like an overall objective for that world that you need to complete in order to move on to the next one, which I've only been to two worlds. I haven't had a whole lot of time to play. The first one was like this weird little beach world, and the second one is like this ice mountain world. And the combat is, you know, it's exactly the same, and they pretty much give you a pretty good roster. I think it's the whole roster from the first one.
Oh, shit.
Minus, like, Donkey Kong, like, obviously, because he was DLC.
Right.
But you got the Mario, Luigi. You got the Rabbid Mario, the Rabbid Luigi, the Rabbid Peach. And you have Mario, Luigi, Peach.
No Yoshi.
No Yoshi. And then you pick up this new Rabbid just called Edge.
Oh, right. The sort of...
And he's got a sword.
Mm-hmm.
But he throws the sword, so it's kind of like he's not a melee class. He still has a ranged class. He just throws the sword, but it's cool because it hits multiple enemies in a line and deals pretty good stacking damage. He's not bad. He's okay. The ones I end up running the most with is Mario, Rabbid Mario, Luigi, and Rabbid Peach.
Because Luigi's a sniper.
Yeah, I really like Luigi. Mm-hmm. He's really good.
He was always on my team in the original.
Mm-hmm. But Rabbid Mario does this AoE cone in front of him and just stupid amounts of damage. But it's very short range. But it's really nice because you can just get him right in the face of like three of them and just light them all up. It's fantastic. And Peach also has a cone attack that does an AoE. But it drops in damage over distance. They're both really handy. But all the characters have like their super move. They have their different kinds of attacks. And they also introduce the sparks as an extra mechanic because each of them will give you ability as well. And that's kind of like where your customization is because all the weapons are the same no matter what. You can get skins, but there's no change in your weapons. There's no different stats. There's no anything like that. It's just leveling up.
Oh, interesting.
And the thing you're leveling up are the sparks.
Because in the original, you of course get new weapons. Mm-hmm. A lot of them you had to buy. But when you buy a new weapon or sub-weapon, It kind of like brings it, like, if you buy Mario a new gun, there'll be like a gun that maybe has a chance to like burn, or a gun that has a chance to like put the honey status ailment, which is one of my go-to.
I really like the honey, yeah.
Because really there's like, oh, by the way, take damage, and also you can't move. And if you like really limit the mobility of your opponents, then you're taking away a lot of the things that they can do.
Well, the way that they supplement that in this one is the sparks. Because for a while, you only can equip one. I just hit a point where I can equip two per character. And it adds to it. So one spark will add fire damage for a turn to your attacks. And one spark would, in an AoE around you, cause the enemies to flee from you.
But like when you say fire damage, it's not like... like a status affliction is like an elemental alignment.
It still will do like that burn thing where they caught on fire and they run.
Oh, nice.
So it still will do that. There's also like an ice one, a water one, an electric one. There's one that increases your dash damage. Grass like a ghost. Yeah, grass like a ghost. There's one that does gust, kind of blows them away a little bit as well. The really one that I like the most is the ooze one, because it's a big AoE. Three hit ooze, so it's a really good way just to get like a mass of them all at once, just take a little bit of damage. And every turn your characters have two regular actions, and then they have their movement on. They can't move after they attack, so as soon as they attack they're done moving, and then they can, of those two actions that they get, they can either attack, use a spark, use their super move, or use an item. So they can use two of those actions to do one of those, two of those four things.
But you can't do the same thing twice?
You can't do the same thing twice. And that's where a lot of the strategy is going to come into. And a lot of it, the most handy thing in the game is the team jump thing, where they throw somebody in the air and you get a little bit of glide. That's just, I abuse the shit out of that. And just getting people in the right spots to do... take certain advantages. And you have the same mechanics of the first one. You take cover. This is half cover, so it's a percentage that it hits. So you can break the things. You have to get to the objective at the end. They have a couple of new enemies to it.
One of the nice things that I remember from the first one is, like, when you get behind cover, it's either going to give you, like... the hit percentage is either going to be 100%, you're going to get hit, 50%, just a flip of the coin, or 0%. There is nothing feeling around like, this is a 72% chance to hit, or this is a 13% chance.
It's pretty straightforward if you're going to hit him or not. And like,
because one of the most annoying things in Fire Emblem is like 86% chance to hit.
And you miss.
If it's less than 90, you're going to fucking miss.
It's super, so annoying. But because of that percentage, Mario Peach is really good. Rabbit Peach, fuck.
Mario Peach.
Yeah, whatever. Rabbit Peach is really good because she has a... like a rocket launcher that fires three rockets, but it goes over objective obstacles.
Okay.
So depending at your angle, like the first one or two may hit the obstacle, but the third will connect. So it's really good at firing from undercover and still hitting people and just lobbing over things. She's really, really handy because she also has the heal ability.
Now, does it also like do damage to like the cover that the enemy is behind?
If one of the rockets hit the enemy, they hit the cover instead.
Oh,
like,
gotcha.
Depending on your angle, like one or two of the rockets may hit the cover, and then your third will connect or something like that, and that will do damage to it as well. So it's really good. I really like in this game. There's a lot of like intricate little things. I'm using a lot of the different characters. The only one I haven't quite figured out a good use for is the Rabbit Luigi, because it does debuff. So it's supposed to like weaken the enemies, but it's only for like a turn. And it doesn't do a lot of damage. The cool thing about him is that he throws a disc that ricochets, but there's not anybody really around. It just does shit damage. And so it's just...
Maybe tough
to figure out where he really works a lot.
Maybe the debuff would be more useful against like a larger enemy, like a boss, maybe?
Yeah, but it's only good for like a turn. Like Peach, her special is he makes you immune for two hits for a turn. So if you... want to throw your guy in a bad situation to deal heavy damage, you can just buff him with any immunity for the next turn. There's also a spark that makes a guy invisible for a couple of turns. And all these sparks and abilities have different cooldowns that vary. They have their own little skill trees that affects all that stuff as well. Just like the first one. I mean, it's cool. I like it. I mean, it's not as... like, the first one was... it felt, like, almost linear, because there wasn't a lot of exploration to it.
Right, right. When you...
you're just going through the game.
When you go to the different zones, it's like, okay, work out this maze towards where you get to the end of the zone and get, all your encounters and stuff.
Yeah, this one feels like a world from, like, Mario Odyssey, where you're exploring around, you have side quests, there's, like, a
like a resource you get for completing side quests and main objectives that you could spend in the shop to get skins for your weapons, or like a key to unlock a secret zone that will get you another spark. And the secret zone was cool. Like, I haven't gotten to the secret zone in the second world yet, but the first one was kind of like a... I'm trying to think what Mario game was. It was like, it's kind of like a, like the Toad treasure trove thing, the treasure...
Oh, Captain Toad treasure tracker?
Yeah, where it's just that one kind of cube area, and it's just turning to a view to adjust your perspective. But you're in that little thing, and there's a bunch of enemies wandering around, and you're just trying to get through that to get to the spark and complete that secret zone. It was a cool little thing. I liked it. But that's all the little side quests and stuff really get you, is that one key... Or you can spend it on weapon skins, which don't do anything.
Hmm.
They just change the look of your gun.
They just charge like 99 cents or something like that.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. But some of the missions and everything were a lot of fun. There was one where I had to turn on these statues of blue wind, and I needed to do it to move bombs through the area to get to a... blocked thing to blow it open.
Okay.
There's cool little... It's a fun game. It's definitely different. It's a little bit more open. You can go wherever you like and do stuff as opposed to just this one linear track like the old one. They kind of just threw you at it, too. They had this one small little tutorial area for your combat, but after that, it was just off you go.
You played a video game before, right? Go, yeah. Go. Got
they it. Still showed you... They still had that brief moment in the beginning of the game where, like, you use the left analog stick to move. And you're like, fuck you, I know how to do this. Like, they still did that shit. And I was stunned. I was like, when do we move on from this?
And it's like, well, we've regressed to that. Because, like, games on NES, Super Nintendo is like, okay, well, how do we can't use text to tell them how to move Mario. So what do? Like, just put Mario on this side of the screen and there's the controller. Like, in your left hand, just press a button and see what happens. And like, okay, well, we got to teach them how to jump, how to do that. We'll just put, like, an enemy in their way. They'll figure it out. It's put a control in people's hands and give them one thing to do. They'll figure it out.
It was just this one little area in the castle, and he had to find Rabbit Mario's overalls because he lost them, so he won't exit the bush because he's naked.
Right.
So you're just exploring this little area looking for overalls.
And cover his shame.
They were in a different bush that you had to go up and shake, and you're like, oh, overalls fell out. We got them. Like, fuck is this?
So discovery things works.
Like, what the fuck? No, it's a good game. I recommend it if you like these kind of games and everything like that. I mean, the Rabbit games, I feel, are underappreciated. These are good games.
I like the first one. I want to get to this one.
You can borrow mine when I'm done.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That's what we'll do then. Let's see, we got a few more games to get through here. New Tales from the Borderlands. I was out on the 21st.
Who cares?
That was a thing. Also, Persona 5 Royale was also on the 21st. I don't really have anything to add about that one.
I almost bought this instead of Rabbids.
I do want to get it on Switch. I think I might have said this before. I do want to get it on Switch because I think I'm more likely to actually finish it if I have it portably. Be able to
commit this more one, time to like, it. This one adds another character or another... Mm-hmm. Zone, whatever they call it.
Okay.
Nine Palace or whatever.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It adds one of those and a new character and stuff with the Royale Edition.
And it does something different. I'm not exactly sure what, but it does something different with, like, this... basically, it's like a grinding area where you can, like, go recruit new demons or level up and stuff like that. I think they call it Mementos. But they do something different with that area to make it a little bit more worthwhile to go into there and gain some levels. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back to it. Want to get it on Switch, because that's where I want to play it. Yomiwari Lost in the Dark out on the 25th, as well as A Winding Path on the 27th. Bayonetta 3 is out tomorrow, like we mentioned before. So we'll have to revisit that one on the mini show.
Did you get it?
Oh yeah, yeah. It should be delivered to me tomorrow.
Oh nice. Yeah. Look at you being lazy.
I gotta support gotta support Jennifer Hale and Amazon, struggling small retailer, Amazon. Resident Evil Village, the cloud version, is out tomorrow as well. We can
test your broadband with that one.
Play that game via the cloud. You can pay $59.99 for access to that game until they decide no more access to this game. You can go ahead and.
Is Control still available?
Control?
Because that was the first one that they did this cloud thing with. It was that game
Control. Oh, yeah. I played a little bit of that game on PC.
Was that good?
Yeah. I mean, it's for real. It's pretty cool.
I was intrigued about playing it. I'm not going to play it on Switch, but...
You should not indulge, like, these companies that are doing cloud versions of games. No.
No, it's bad.
I think...
But what you can do, because I did this, right now, the entire Capcom Resident Evil library is, like, half off.
Mm.
So, because we, you know... It will be coming, I guess, at some point on the GameCube for the retro show purposes. I got Resident Evil 4.
Nice.
Yep, I have that also on the Switch.
Nice big discount. So, like, all the other ones are there, too. If you want to play a Resident Evil game, they've got lots of them to play.
The other Resident Evil games that were out on the GameCube, if you want to do any following along when we get to these things, is Resident Evil 0, as well as the Resident Evil remake, Resident Evil 1.
Yeah.
And...
I also bought because I feel like I might have gone overboard by saying Grand Theft Auto 3 was like the greatest game ever made or something.
Top 10. You called it a top 10 game.
Yeah.
I don't think either of us were going to argue with you.
I got the trilogy pack.
Oh, nice.
It was also on sale for $29. So I got 3, Vice City, and San Andreas. Straight for Switch.
Hopefully they did some work on that because when it came out, it was not in a very good technical state.
Okay.
So hopefully they did some updating.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't like to presume to tell people what to do with their money, but I also think, like, if you pay money for something, you should get something in return rather than, you know, access.
Yeah.
Like, I give you money, you give me a game. End of transaction.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough sell, but, like, how else are you going to play it if you're, you know, if you solely have a Switch and you're not a PC gamer?
I guess you can kind of argue with it. It's like eventually... They're not going to support the Switch shop, whatever that, the eShop.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever games you don't have downloaded on your Switch, you won't have access to anymore, even though you bought them.
So
I guess that's kind of like cloud storage. It's just it's going to take a lot longer.
Kind of. Except with games that are that you've downloaded but don't have installed, there is a window. And they broadcast this very loudly. Like, hey, the shop is going to close on this day, and then you will have... So far, it's been like an extra year. You have an extra year to re-download anything that you have purchased but uninstalled. And then once that window is shut, then the shop is closed for good. So yeah, there is a point where if you've purchased something, uninstalled it, and haven't re-downloaded it, there will be a point where you just can't access it anymore. You won't be able to re-download it. But they give you lots of warning.
Yeah. Also, the inevitable heat death of the planet Earth. It's also
a right, closing right. We will be absorbed by the sun one day.
Yeah.
And probably a week before that, they'll release Mother 3.
Or some elder god, or, you know, something.
Right.
Something's going to get us, and then we won't be able to play these games anyway.
Right, so Lord Helix will come in.
I have not. I want to. I haven't gotten around to it, though.
Lord Helix
will fucking rabbits.
Come to harvest our souls.
Yeah. Bless his name.
But before that, I really like, because we're gonna get to it in November, because they're releasing the Resident Evil remakes of 2 and 3 in November as cloud version games. I really like these games, especially the remake of 2. I would just recommend, if you don't want to play them on another platform, just hold off for the Switch 2, because they will inevitably get ported to whatever the next system is. It will happen.
Or if you have a PlayStation, just buy it for your PlayStation.
You can play it on your PlayStation. It's super cheap. It's super cheap on your PlayStation. I can't in good conscience recommend that somebody pay whatever they're going to charge on Switch. It's probably it might be as much as $60. They might be charging full price.
For a cloud download.
It's streaming. It's not a download.
Oh, you're right. Oh, God.
So you have to have an internet connection, which is, of course...
makes it difficult to play portably.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to sit in my doctor's office lounge waiting for some guy to poke me with needles playing Resident Evil.
Have you played Control?
I want to. It's on my list.
Playing that game, don't play that game handheld. That's one of those games. It's a very cinematic game. It would be kind of absurd to play a game like that on handheld. Not to tell people how they should and shouldn't play games. That's one of those games where I don't think that's a dentist's office.
Yeah.
15-minute experience.
I'm just making a joke.
You know?
I think you'll be able to do that because
I need to make 2 points here. First of all, we've prefaced things that we've said, not to tell people how to live their lives. I think maybe we throw that out the window. I think we do come here to tell people how to live their lives. And I say we lean into that.
Okay. I think yes, that Control is a game that should be played in IMAX. So
decided.
Rent out your local theater, get a projector, and make it fucking happen. Unless you're casual. You know? That's your problem, not mine.
Second of all, the doctor's office is Wes's go-to illustration every time. How is often this, are you in doctor's offices?
I feel
offices?
Like this is the first time I referenced the doctor's office.
No, every time.
I haven't been to a doctor's office in, like, longer than I should have. Like, I could be dying tomorrow. I have no idea.
Well, that would be tragic.
It would.
You would never get to finish Mario plus Rabbids.
Well, I mean, if I die, you can have it.
So oh, here's praise the Jesus. You see, like, a red dot on your forehead?
Here's the thing. I feel like...
Just beat it for me. Think of me when you're playing it.
There must be some requirement of them servicing these titles, right? Like, I mean, I'm very quickly now trying to do the research on it as we talk, and I can't find a solid answer on it. But, like, if you're going to buy a cloud game, there should be this expectation that if they don't provide cloud service for X number of years, you should be getting some kind of refund. Mm. Like, I think that should be the standard. I don't think you could just buy a cloud game and then decide, oopsie doopsie, we're done with it.
Buy it and it's in the next day they stop supporting
like,
it.
Like Google did with the Stadia?
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think in this case, if it's going to be sold on Nintendo's store, I mean, I'm sure there's something in the dozens and dozens of pages that you could read through whenever you purchase anything, right? That there's got to be something in there explaining what the expectation is. I guess it matters who is releasing the game. Like, where are these cloud servers even coming from? Are these maintained by Nintendo? Or are these maintained by the third-party developers?
No, they're on the... It's on the moon with the people that Amazon shipped up there.
I mean, it's a quagmire. And yeah, you should definitely do... If you're thinking like you are, where, you know, you care that you have this wall of video games that are from 20 years ago or whatever, that you want the collection and you want it to be yours forever. Yeah, I mean, that's antithetical to cloud gaming. Mm-hmm. But it's also on you, the game purchaser, to do your research.
Like to know what you're spending your money
on. And determine that, yeah, I'm good to buy this game for $60 because I'm going to play it for a couple of years and then maybe never again.
Mm.
I do, yeah, that makes sense. Also, like those services that they got on PlayStation and Xbox, like they're like the Netflix version of video games, mm-hmm. where you, as long as you have the subscription, you have access to these games. And I do like those because there's games on there I would like to try, but I don't necessarily want to spend $60 on it. Like, I like to play this game, see how it is, and stuff like that. I have no interest in going back to it. Those kind of services are fantastic for it. But that's much cheaper, and it's a monthly thing that you can just stop whenever the hell you want, opposed to dropping $60 on a game.
Right, and then there's a constant rotation. Yeah. Like, okay, some things are leaving. They give you, like, a few weeks heads up.
Those
like, this is what's leaving, this is what's coming.
I would support that. Like, that's pretty cool.
I mean, that is
things, I'm like,
Like Netflix for video games, which, you know, I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to that sort of thing. I don't want Sony and Microsoft curating my collection. I'm going to do that, thank you.
That's just side stuff, really. Like, yeah, I'm not going to get that for, like, a main game. If there's a game that I'm like, Mario and Rabbids, I'm not going to get a subscription so I can play Mario and Rabbids. I'm just going to fucking buy Mario and Rabbids.
What if I told you it was $10 a month and you get every first-party Nintendo game that they're going to release?
Yeah, I'm on board for that.
I just sold you so easily. You turned around so quickly
I'm saying I agree with it.
Was Rabbids a AAA title?
No.
I think...
How much was it?
It's... So,
how much did you pay for it?
The regular price.
$59.99.
Oh, it's triple. Okay.
You bought 6 months worth of it with that one game you purchased.
I wasn't saying I'm against this. I'm saying I...
Are you going to buy a Pokemon game too?
I was saying support these services opposed to cloud. What the fuck? I don't know where my position is anymore. You guys confused the fuck
I think we've all flip-flop on this multiple times.
I support the Netflix video games.
I don't.
For games that I don't want to... Oh, but want to
for games you don't want to play.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I may play if it's this. I'm not gonna drop.
I think
like Greedfall.
I think Greedfall $10 I played through is totally reasonable.
Yeah, that's fine
for a monthly fee.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think Wes has got it.
It's like $20, but you know,
with especially with as many games as you purchase. Keep in mind, I literally just bought fucking Grand Theft Auto 3.
Yeah,
like that's a game I had on PlayStation 2. That is a game that's literally in my Steam shop, like in my Steam library. I got like a Rockstar pack years ago. And I bought it a third time. Like, if you want to play... If you don't... Like, you could spend $60 on Control now, and then 7 years from now on the Switch 2, you could be playing Control again, but actually just downloaded for the game and running on the new hardware that they've made, you know, the Switch Pro.
Hmm.
which came out in
2024. Wait a minute, I own the N64 thing, which is essentially equivalent. Fuck it, whatever. Let's move on.
What are we even talking about? Oh yeah, we were talking about Resident Evil. But let's move on to games coming out in November. Speaking of the Nintendo 64 thing you just mentioned, they're adding two new games to the expansion.
They're very good.
Mario Party 1.
Yeah.
And Mario Party 2.
Whoa. You motherfuckers.
I hope that they release Mario Party 3 in December and we get back to back to back. Oh, that'd be so funny. Oh, I love this. Fuckers. This is such a brilliant troll. Amazing. No notes. 10 out of 10, Nintendo. Well done. I love it. I was actually... Okay, I do have a note. I was hoping that they would do like a three-month span all Mario Party games, because they had been in a pattern of like releasing a Nintendo 64 game a month or every couple of months. But then they announced, hey, all these other ones are coming. We're going to do one monthly. And I was like, oh, please, for the love of God, just release Mario Party 1, 2, 3 in back-to-back-to-back months, because it would piss everyone off. Mm-hmm. And I love it. Let's see, it's an interesting looking indie game. This was on the playlist that I sent you guys. From Space is like a top down multiplayer shooter.
For this one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks kind of fun. Got like a really like high energy, super frenetic action game. Kind of like what a new Contra should have been, rather than the one we got.
You know what else I got on sale? This is kind of, maybe we'll actually like do a little review of it, but I got The Mummy Demastered.
Oh, nice.
A game from 2017.
Yeah, I know the
which
one.
Which is a tie-in to the movie.
Right. from when they had to, like, they tried to do like the Dark Universe, like the Universal Monsters.
Oh, yeah. This feels like the kind of game that you would have got like back in the day in like a box of cereal or something. Like they would have just given you a demo disc for this thing. It's ridiculous.
Oh, like the Chex Quest.
Yeah. It's fun, though. It really is fun. It's kind of like things. Contra mixed with like Metroid.
Mm.
It's very, very fun.
Yeah, it's I think it was Way Forward who developed.
Mm-hmm.
So now From Space.
Well, Way Forward makes good stuff, right?
Oh yeah, they did Contra 4 on the DS, the Shantae games, A Boy and His Blob. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so despite the Shantae games, they make good stuff.
Those are good games. games. You're an asshole.
We're getting all over the place, but yeah, this does look like a kind of like a fun isometric Contra style experience. Mm-hmm.
Totally Accurate Battle Simulator. That's a game that came up a couple of times on some different Nintendo Directs. That
I'm sick of seeing this. Can we just...
Yeah, we can move on. November 4th. That's when it's out. Eterna Noctis, out on November 4th. This is a really nice looking, like Metroidvania kind of game. It's a really nice hand-drawn art style to it.
Named by the people that named the characters from that.
Dio Food Chronicle. Yeah, yeah.
Field Chronicles.
They should just name everything from now on.
Right, this game looked interesting.
Shibidow Bumblebutt. I think was one of the characters.
Sure. Shibidoo McTitties. Anyway, Wes, you were saying.
This looks good. I like this game.
Yeah, I think it does
intrigued
look
by this.
Looks solid.
It's kind of like a Metroid Castlevania-ish kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. Anything else about this game that we need to... I'm not going to say the name again. Before we move on, Harvestella, that Square Enix farming game, is coming out November 4th. It's the second Square Enix farming game that's coming out next year.
I'm warming up to this game.
Yeah.
I was kind of against it.
There's a demo.
I'm more. Is there?
Yeah.
I should try the demo, because I am warming up to it. Because the combat looks pretty interesting, and it doesn't look like it's like heavy harvesting.
No. It's not like Stardew Valley.
Yeah.
Like,
it's kind of like that's a side thing that... It's just, well, not a side thing, but part of it. I don't
Maybe.
Know.
But yeah.
But I'm warming up to it. It looks interesting. So I'll Wes try
gonna,
it out.
Wes is going to try the demo.
I just saw isometric 3D combat and it said break. So I can only assume the next thing that's going to follow is a topple.
You got a topple.
It better have a
topple. Oh, and then you launch and then you smash. And
isn't that copyrighted, though? Can they do that?
I think with such an amazing idea like that, you have to share. Like, it would be rude to not share.
It's like you just discovered the cure for polio. And you're like, I think not, though. I think this is just for me.
Yeah. only I will be cured from polio. The rest of you motherfuckers can just have polio.
But now you know the cure is possible. It's out there. You can do it.
Yeah. You just learn how to break, topple, smash, and cure polio by yourself.
And that will sue the shit out of you for taking my idea.
It Takes Two, out on the same day, November 4th. Sonic Frontiers, fellas, out on the 8th.
Whoop, whoop.
There's a demo, try it, but...
Is there?
I don't know. I said if there was.
Okay. No, I
probably not. I doubt around a game like that.
I don't give a shit. Like, every time... Like,
it's a skill tree.
Oh, amazing. Is one of the skills just turning the game off?
Well, one would hope.
I mean, I like to be optimistic about this. I mean, everyone, I like a good Sonic game.
Everyone always is. Everyone
and
is.
And then you get burnt.
Yeah, it has a name. It's the Sonic cycle, where like a new one is announced, like, oh, maybe this one will be good. And they show a little bit more, like, oh, maybe this is going to finally be the one. And then when it comes time to release, like, oh, never mind.
Oh, yeah, human teeth, never mind.
This is weird, but it feels almost like Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, that's funny.
It's giant open areas and then very large bosses you have to fight. I guess the idea is that it's Sonic and you want to run really fast, so hopefully they give you room to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It'll be a game, certainly.
Eh. It is a video game, that's for sure.
I'll grab it if you got really cheap.
It will be. Sifu is out on November the 8th. That's a little action beat-em-up looking game.
Yeah, spell that one?
S-I-F-U.
Yeah, I think people might need that.
Yeah.
She's called a game Sifu. I wouldn't know what the hell C is, like the letter C-F-U.
This is an interesting game. I mean, I have no interest in ever playing it, but it's a fun concept.
I think it's the kind of game, like, if they had released it this past May when there was nothing else coming out, I probably would have tried it. But
I mean, this game's been out for a while now, though.
Oh, more than 9 months?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, well, you can't say a while unless you for sure it's no more than 9 months.
You know what I mean.
That is canonical to this podcast. A while.
So what can I say if it's under 9 months?
A bit.
Okay, so it's been out for a bit.
Okay.
The video that you sent, this trailer, must have come out like right when they did the direct, because the top comment is finally a non-farming game.
Amazing. That deserves top comment. Yeah. Tactics Ogre Reborn, fellas, out November the 11th. I'm pumped.
About that? I'm very excited.
I think it's going to be real cool.
I'll live vicariously through you two.
Lots of visual improvements. Mm-hmm. Got all your tactics stuff going on there.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. I'm pumped.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's actually going to coincide.
Very detailed.
I'll have to watch you guys play it before I'm like, all right, let's pull the trigger on it.
Well, you're already playing a tactics game.
I am.
No one will blame you for skipping this one, if you know.
Oh, I'll skip it for now. There's a lot. I'm going to have to start making a list of games to go back to, because I'm missing a lot right now that I want to play.
You're speaking my language. I love making lists.
Ugh. You lists and spreadsheets and making maps.
50% of my game time is just like writing down the things that I've done. But Tactics Ogre, it's actually coinciding with me taking like a week and a half off of work, so I'm excited to ignore my family that entire time.
I keep forgetting to request off for Pokemon, because I think I'm just going to do that. I just want to spend a solid day.
Pokemon is going to be
half the game.
Yeah, Pokemon will be out like kind of at the tail end. I'll still have like 3 or 4 days off when Pokemon comes out, because that's out on the 18th, fellas. Oof, what a time to be alive, you guys. We got a new Pokemon game. You guys pumped?
Pretty excited.
I'm excited. Have you seen the new Pokemon?
Oh, the dog?
Yeah.
Tell us about the dog, Wes.
So, have you seen it?
No.
So, I
really haven't been following. I mean, it's a game I know I'm going to buy. So, I'm not really that worried about
it. Like, I'm not looking into, like, evolutions or anything like that. I don't want to know what the starters turn into.
I don't think they have. I haven't noticed.
But they did another one. Like, you know, they did a couple months back the Pokemon where they did the little... kind of like the guy wandering through the woods. It's like, what's this weird Pokemon leaving traces? They did another one of those things, and it's somebody like looking for ghosts, and this little dog pops out that has a candle on its head, and it's a ghost type.
Interesting.
But the flavor text for this thing, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's something along the lines, I forget what the thing's even called, but if you give this dog attention, he will become your... He will love you unconditionally and follow you to the ends of the earth. Unfortunately, he will slowly drain the life force from you. I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, it's nice. This thing can literally love you to death. Like, it's...
Very good. I love it.
Yeah.
I was like, I thought this was... Like, in the trailer as well, she's like, oh, look at this dog. It's adorable. And, like, you see their eyes slowly droop.
Oh, yeah.
Like the screen gets darker, like they're closing their eyes. Mm-hmm. And then the trailer ends with them passing out.
And the dog, like, looking over there, like, you can see like, the dog getting close to their face because it gets real close to the camera, like, looking all happy, like, hey, you dying?
You dying?
What, are you dead?
I mean, it's probably still safer than a pit bull.
The hell you go. Goodbye, friend. And then they have that Wiglet which looks terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the worm, like, leech-looking thing?
Yeah.
I don't like that thing either. Ooh.
I saw that thing, and the first thing that popped in my head was, I texted you guys a picture of the Keizu from Monster Hunter.
Mm.
I was like, yeah, that's gotta be its evolution.
It makes sense.
It's a horror show.
Yeah, we got still, like, some cross-franchise synergy going there. So, oh, like I mentioned earlier, the Resident Evil 2 remake, that's out on November the 11th through the cloud. Same day as Tactics Ogre, and then the Resident Evil 3 remake is out the 18th, same day as Pokemon. Kind of unfortunate timing for the Resident Evil 3 remake.
Meh.
But yeah.
Because of what? Or just the other games coming out?
Because it's coming out the same day as Pokemon, yeah.
Like, what's the Venn diagram of those? Come on.
Just us. Yeah. Just
no one else. Yeah.
Unfortunate for that, I'm not going to get our money.
Yeah.
But like the three, I greatly prefer the remake of 2 rather than 3, mostly because like the replayability value, I think, is just so much higher in the Resident Evil 2 remake, because while it doesn't have like the same like number of scenarios to play through, remember how like in the original Resident Evil 2 you had your two characters and the A and the B story for each one of them.
Yeah.
So for example, you play as Claire A, you encounter Sherry, and you go on adventures with this child, this very annoying child. And then if you play through Claire B, Claire's actually interacting with Ada. And the same is true for Leon.
Yeah.
They remix where you're putting items in the sort of progression going through the game. In the Resident Evil 2 remake, you have like a first and second scenario with both characters. But rather than mixing up the characters they're interacting with, Leon is always going to be interacting with Ada, and Claire will always be interacting with Sherry. You just kind of get like abbreviated versions and like item location remixes in like the first and second scenario with both characters.
That was just because they wanted to only pay that voice actress for one day's worth of work as Ada.
That's probably it. Mm-hmm. Probably right there. Didn't want to like dub her over saying Claire.
She only made $300 a session too, so I mean...
Mm. They lowballed her. Then you should have given her more money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really like these remakes. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you guys before. Resident Evil 2 is a notably good game.
It's a fantastic game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but there's no Steve in it.
That would make it like too perfect. The game would be too big, so good it would be unplayable.
If it had Steve in it.
Yeah.
As of this bonus content, where instead of Sherry, it's Steve.
Oh, that'd be amazing. But like a miniature like child version of Steve.
Absolutely.
But not like a child version of that character, but like Steve just shrunken down child size.
Oh my God.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And he still turns into a monster.
Of course, yes, because that's the perfect ending for a perfect douche. What a game. Code Veronica's so good, you guys. They have not remade Code Veronica. They're remaking 4.
They are, yeah.
Looking forward to playing that on the Switch 3.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Why?
Yeah, sure, it'll be fine.
It's weird to think about because 4 is a game that's just been infinitely ported to everything. And you think of it like as a more modern game as opposed to like Resident Evil 2, 3, Code Veronica, where, you know, you're still dealing with fixed camera angles and tank controls, things like that, where 4 is behind the back and much more action intensive. So maybe from that perspective, it's weird that it's remade. It's not as in need of a big update as older Resident Evil games may have been.
I wonder if I haven't played it on the Switch, but I wonder if you can still use Joy-Cons for like motion. Like
the gyro aiming?
Yeah, like they did for the Wii.
Ryan owns it.
Yeah.
I own it too. I just haven't played it yet.
Oh, really?
I own it. It's been sitting in my library for like a year.
Okay. Let's see. Ship of Fools is out on the 22nd. That was like that party game where you're all sailors. Not on the moon, though.
Yeah.
I think it looks
kind of good.
I think it looks kind of like fun and hectic, but there's so many other games coming out that's going to pass right by.
See, games like that, and I would like to play It Takes Two, but...
Mm.
You guys are like my only friends, and yeah, we're not gonna play those games, are we?
Not with that attitude.
You should go back and like sign up for just exactly 1 month of World of Warcraft, and then tell them that you're coming back to advise them that what they're doing is poison, and it's ruining their brains, and that there's this wonderful game called Ship of Fools, and you'd be happy to play with them.
And they should feel lucky to play with you.
Yeah, and this guild is bullshit.
I feel like Amen.
This guild is like the worst HOA I've ever been involved in.
Well, Where were we? At some point, we haven't gotten a release date from Forever Entertainment or Square Enix yet, but Front Mission First Remake should be out at some point in November. So there's that. Yeah. There's a lot of games in November.
Yeah, but we're only really going to play Pokemon.
And Tactics Ogre. We'll play some Tactics Ogre.
Yeah.
Those two things will happen. I'll still be playing Bayonetta probably up until
Tactics Ogre
comes out. But yeah. So, anything else we need to address here? Guys watching any new shows?
I watched Bullet Train.
Oh yeah? What'd you think?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah?
It's one of those... Have you guys seen it yet?
No.
I haven't seen it.
It's stupid and pointless. It's one of those movies where it's just a string of coincidences that lead into other things, and it's just wacky nonsense, but it was fun.
Okay.
I've tried to think of a movie to compare it to, but like... There isn't a thing in that movie that doesn't either get referenced back or affect the overall what's happening. Like, everything is... There's purpose to everything that they mention in that movie, and it's very interesting. But it's stupid. It's fun. It's dumb action, but, you know, I recommend it. It's great.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see it when it was in theaters, but I definitely wanted to.
Yeah, I just rented it the other day. I was like, screw it, let's watch this thing. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did see Hatching.
Oh, God.
Finnish horror film.
Yeah, how was that?
The one with the girl turning into the bird?
Something. Well, no, that's not exactly what happens.
You can spoil it. It's okay.
It's okay.
Or the bird turns into her and then, like, eats her? I don't know.
Like, yeah, so I guess in it's supposed to be a play, essentially, on the bird, the cuckoo. Do you guys know what a cuckoo bird is?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole premise about how it will lay its eggs in another bird's nest, and then when its baby will hatch, it will destroy all the other eggs, or it will kick all the other eggs out of the nest.
Yeah.
So it's this way for the cuckoo to not have to, like raise the bird, but also ensure the survival of the species.
God, all
right. That's I think, generally what is supposed to... It's so weird, though. But yeah, essentially that's what happens is, there's a bird that flies into the window and it's mortally wounded and the mom ends up killing it, or she thinks ends up killing it. The girl goes and finds the egg, finds the bird, and then actually kills it, because it's like, I'm telling you all sorts of weird pointless plot stuff. Essentially,
no, that's okay, get into it.
She finds an egg from a bird that she has to kill. And then just feels bad about it, so she ends up sort of raising the egg herself. And then, like, the egg just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, so clearly it's not a normal egg. And then it hatches, and then the thing that comes out of that egg is just this hideous fucking monster. Like baby bird hatchling that's, like, 5 feet tall and super gangly and looks like a horror character. And it's kind of like E.T. E.T., if it were a horror film, because she's got to, like, basically make sure nobody knows that she's got this bird.
Is there a scene where it's mixed in with a bunch of stuffed animals? And...
No, this thing would stick out. It's pretty gruesome looking.
I remember buying you that nightmare fuel. What the fuck is this?
But essentially, and like, really what the story is supposed to be about is about an overbearing mother. Her mother. Who is very overbearing and is just very kind of like Tiger Mom. You guys know what Tiger Mom is? Mm. Kind of like that, where she's just far too demanding of this poor girl and really is just very militant about her life and what she expects this girl to achieve. And slowly through a series of events, like this bird monster that she's been raising starts to become more and more girl-like, actually becoming like a real girl. And of course it's all leads up to this big moment, at the end where the daughter and the mother realize that they need to take this thing out. And then just, you know, again, I feel like it's worth watching and it's a movie that has a couple of gruesome moments, but it's not a particularly violent film. It's not it is a violent film, but it's not the kind of movie that's going to rack up a huge body count or anything like that. It's not really about that. It's not like you're watching 10 different characters that you hate get get slaughtered. It's really, it's almost like, did you guys ever see any of the Michael Haneke's films, like Funny Games or anything like that?
No.
He's another European director who makes these claustrophobic that on face value feel very uplifting but are deeply disturbed. And Haneke's films are oftentimes about controlling families, like controlling parents and stuff.
Yeah,
like
I remember that. Funny Games is the one where like there's the home invaders who are very sadistic.
Yes, kind of. It has that kind of feel to it as a movie. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It's got a fun bit of body horror in it. If you like that kind of stuff,
I do not.
Pass. Okay. I was never gonna watch this movie anyways, but I do. It's weird. Like, I like the story of these movies. I like to hear about what happened and everything. Like, oh, that's a fun story. I never want to actually watch these movies. Mm. I want nothing to do with these things. Like, I don't feel like having a weird human-sized baby bird in my nightmares for the next month. Like, I don't need that.
Like, there's actually a movie that came out a few years ago that I feel like is like kindred spirits to this called, I think, Vivarium.
Oh, yeah, I know the one. Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg is in it, yeah. And a similar scenario happens where this young couple, it's thrust upon them that they will raise this child that they don't want, and they know the child's not human and it's not theirs, but they're sort of trapped in this environment where they're forced to raise it, and it's just so fucking creepy. So those are two movies I recommend. See Hatching for sure, especially if you like the Cronenberg-esque body horror component, and then Vivarium is a really good movie too. I didn't get to see any of them. There's so many good horror movies out right now that I haven't gotten a chance to see.
It is October.
Yeah, I did see a really good older movie called Peeping Tom. I think it came out in 67
I don't know that one.
Or 8? Much older film, but it's about a serial killer, and you know who it is because you follow him throughout this whole movie as he sort of documents killing people. He has this fixation on capturing people on film right before they die and know that they're going to die. Fucking loved it. It was incredible. Really, really well shot. Good use of color. And just a creepy character. Like, I dug that too. That's what I've been watching. I didn't get to see any of the other big ones out right now. Like, the new Halloween movie is supposed to be very good.
Me and Des watched the new Halloween. It was not.
Oh, it wasn't?
No. Well, no, we did not care for it.
Was it a change of pace, at least? I had heard some interesting stuff about it, that it wasn't like what you would expect from the previous...
Right, so you know, when you think of a Halloween movie, it's, you know, so a group of townspeople are being terrorized by a man in a mask who's just going around stabbing people, right. And you're just like watching the body count grow and grow and grow, and it's not really about that. So general premise is there is this sort of ostracized young adult, and he still lives in this town. He was accused of a crime that I'm not convinced that he didn't commit, but he still lives in this town where he was acquitted of this crime and is still ostracized by the town because they'll still think that he did it, and maybe rightfully so. But he strikes this friendship and this relationship with the granddaughter of Jamie Lee Curtis, who's playing the same character that she does in the Halloween movies. And she's the granddaughter is a very just normal like town girl. She's got a job, she has friends, and we're supposed to believe that these two are engaging in a relationship with each other, and he's just like kind of this creepy weirdo. Like, what does she see in him? They don't really ever establish like why it is that
she likes the bad boys.
I mean, he's not even really so much of that. He's
just the creepy. She likes the creepy boys.
He looks sweaty all the time. He always looks like...
Was it raining out? No.
Yeah, he always looks like he was caught in a heavy mist. No. Then they're sort of descent. I don't know. I don't want to give away too much because you can watch it and see for yourself if you like it or not, but they're sort of descent into like how the town is dealing with the legacy of the Michael Myers killings and this like the threat of a return of Michael Myers. So, and Michael Myers, as you might imagine, does make an appearance. He does have a presence in the movie, but it's very much about like these two young adult characters who are fucking, but you're never really quite sure why.
In the biblical terms.
So, yeah.
They're fucking.
So, like, the town is aware of Mike Myers? Like, they realize that he's, like, a supernatural being that will just show up every once in a while and kill some of them?
I don't know if they are aware of a supernatural quality.
Is he supposed
quality.
To be supernatural?
I just think they think of him as just, like, some guy. Like, there's a thing that happened. And this... I don't know what is, like, canonical to the Halloween series, because...
I thought he was just some dude. I didn't think he was supernatural.
I think in, like, the... maybe Halloween 1 and 2, he was just some dude. But then in other Halloween movies, he's
I've seen many, many Halloween movies, and he's done some fucked up things and survived some fucked up things. I feel like you can't just say this is one guy who's tanked a lot of damage and then just had the first aid kits on
him. He is, like, super fucking durable. And he, like, in every Halloween movie, he does the thing where, like, he's lagging and you think he's finally down right. for the count, and he just, like, sits straight up. Yeah. Like, that's kind of his maneuver. I'm like, oh, bitch, you shouldn't have left the knife right by him. Pick it up. Take it with you next time.
Mm-hmm. Finish the job. Like, he's not sitting up yet. Get him in the head. Like, just...
No, he'd probably live. Probably survive that.
Well.
But yeah. We didn't care for it.
I haven't seen Barbarian, and I haven't seen Pearl. Those are the other two big ones I want to see that are out right now, because those look for real.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see Black Adam tomorrow.
Yeah. That'll be fun. Sure, I heard Henry Cavill said that he will be reprising his role as Superman. He didn't say what the feature film would be, but I mean, I guess there's hopes that since this Black Adam 1 was successful and 2 has a stable front man in The Rock, who will, you know, probably gladly make many of these films that they'll if it works out for him.
Which Black Adam is supposed to be a villain, right?
I don't know.
That would make sense then, yeah. Like, yeah, that would be sure like a villain. Yeah, it'd be someone to butt heads with against Superman, since he seems to be a very, very strong person.
I think he's a Shazam villain.
Oh. Then there you go.
I don't know fuck all about.
Wouldn't that DC be wild up? If Shazam were to team up with Superman and they had to go toe to toe with Lex Luthor and Black Adam? That would be fun.
Yeah. Sure.
No.
But it's gotta be, what's his face from the last Superman movie?
Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah, it's gotta be him as Lex Luthor again.
Wait a minute, wasn't The Rock the voice of the dog in like a recent animated dog movie?
Super Pets. Super Pets.
Wow.
Oh, they're cross-pollinating there.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable.
That's not gonna work.
Oh, that they,
He's acting and voice acting in the same movie.
Warner Brothers Discovery, I think they just hired James Gunn to sort of be like the co-director, the co, like, head of their DC movies. And
that's a good guy to bring in. I mean, at least he makes fun movies.
Yeah.
He makes some grisly movies too, but he makes fun ones.
Didn't he do the Guardians?
Yeah, he did the Guardians movies. He did the second Suicide Squad.
Maybe he can find some way to combine Slither with the DC properties.
Oh, God. All right.
But I don't know. I just have a hard time getting excited for anything that... any superhero movie at this point. It's fine. I can't muster any excitement for DC movies because I just don't give a shit about these characters in general. And Marvel movies, I'm just sort of dreading the entry of the X-Men into that, and I don't want them in there, but...
Watch them do it right. Watch it be good. Just out of spite.
I mean, if they do well and it's good, cool, but...
Just the very last thing you see at the end credits is just the very last thing is just fuck you, John. It just keeps going, and that's the end of the credits.
And I do like the Mike Wazowski, like, oh my god, I'm in a movie.
I'm in a movie.
But Doom Patrol, fellas, is coming out season 4 in December.
I still haven't finished 3. I gotta go back to that.
I really love Doom Patrol.
Oh, I don't have HBO Max anymore. I need to get that again.
Mm. But yeah, anything else we need to cover here? Are we done? We done here?
I'm done.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Done.
You don't want to talk about Rings of Power?
Oh, I watched that show.
What a giant pile of meh.
Are you kidding me? I fucking love it.
I find it boring as hell.
That was for real.
I thought it was good.
I loved it. Yeah.
At what point does it get good? Because I'm not done with it yet.
Okay. How many episodes have you watched?
6.
if good is defined as like big action scenes, then yeah, 7 and 8 are going to be big action
There's
scenes.
There's nothing that happens that I care about so far. It's like, all right, the dude fell from the sky. What the fuck?
Maybe that's on you.
It's probably me, because I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings fan.
I think, yeah.
It's just, like, every episode seems slow, and they're just skipping around with so many different characters and stories so like quickly and often. Just like,
this is more like Lord of the Rings.
When did they make the rings? I don't...
It's like Lord of the Rings fan fiction. Like, I don't think this is, like, strictly... This is an interpretation.
I hear everybody saying it's amazing, but I'm like... It's fine.
I think it's really... I don't want to be hyperbolic and say it's, like, amazing. It's not the best show I've ever seen. I literally watched a better TV show than this 2 months before in Sandman. I really like Sandman a lot. Mm-hmm. But this is still really, really good. And, yeah, I actually got engrossed in the characters. And I think it's nice that they did spend those 6 episodes or so kind of getting you into the world and just showing you... The Tolkien
fell asleep during episode 1. Just legit fell asleep.
Do you have to kind of just enjoy watching, like, them kind of live slice of lifestyle? I think that's one of the more interesting things about, like, Tolkien is the world that he built, and not that everything is a constant battle. There are, of course, those big battles, and, like, in the movies, you know, like, when you go back and watch, like, what was it, Two Towers, right? And it's like, there's 2 hours of just a movie. And then, by the way, they're like, oh my god, here's just an hour of action. Here's just this giant fucking action
scene. Watch people slam into each other for a half hour.
Right. You know, so it's kind of like, it's like if you took the flow of Two Towers and then stretched it over 8 episodes. Where it's like the first 6 are really just going to be about character building, getting you invested in them, showing you what their arcs are. And then, you know, the next 2 are really those big action things that are going to pay off some of the stuff. And yeah, a lot of the characters you're seeing now are critical characters to the narrative. Like, I've actually watched Fellowship of the Rings, like, 4 times the past 6 months. I've just been putting it on loop, because my girlfriend really likes it, and we've just been watching it over and over again. And that first 10 minutes or so, where they just tell you, like, boom, 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 it is like a cliff notes of everything you need to know about what these seasons, if they make multiple seasons of Rings of Power, are going to be about. By name, 3 or 4 characters are referenced in that are in this.
So yeah, it's got Galadriel, it's got Elrond, it's got...
Not just them, but, like the character of Adar that you're seeing in there, he's going to be a big...
Which one's Adar?
Like, the big, the half... what do they call them? The contorted elves that basically command the orcs.
The guy who's leading the orcs digging the trench?
Okay.
Yeah, like he's a
huge... Oh, that's who that is?
Okay. Yeah.
What? That's who that is. The human-looking orc.
Yeah, like, there's I don't want to spoil anything because you kind of need to watch the show, but there is a character, two characters in it who maybe don't seem like much are going to be the major players in all of it.
Yeah, Isildur is in it. He's going to cut the ring at some point.
Who's Isildur?
He's the guy who's going to cut the ring from Sauron's hand.
Yeah, he's the kid of the commander, the one that was like the flunky on the boat.
Oh, he's the one that does it.
Yeah, so, I mean, you'll get to that moment down the line that's going to pay off. And, of course, someone that you think is a good guy maybe ain't such a good guy. You'll find out who that is.
Yeah, I just don't know enough about Lord of the Rings Hobbit to girl. Follow this. Hobbit girl sent a girl?
Oh, yeah.
Is that Gandalf that fell from the sky?
You'll find out.
Is that who it's supposed to be?
You'll find out.
Or is that Sauron?
You'll find out.
Somebody like that, I don't know.
Did you know that Gandalf was around sort of at he was there at the beginning of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's old as fuck.
Yeah, like, he was birthed when all of the world was birthed.
Right? This is sort of like the Cliff Notes version of, like, the creation of the world, the Tolkien world, is that there's, like, the sort of, like, allegory of Christian God, and then he creates all of these, it was sort of like angels, but it was, like, kind of like a step above angel in terms of, like, a deification, and Gandalf is one of them. As those are the other wizards.
Yeah.
As Sauron, I'm not sure, but like the other the guy who Sauron works
Sauron,
for, Morgoth.
Morgoth.
Supposed to be like the best of them.
Mm-mm. Where is he in this? Is Morgoth around or is he
dead?
He's dead. Okay.
Yeah. He died before the events of this.
Did the elves get him when they moved over?
Yes.
Okay. I don't fucking know these things.
No.
I don't know.
There's a complex history.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I'm not super familiar with it either.
It is. It's kind of, at the same time, it's very frustrating too, because like as you're watching it, you'll hear a name or a word and you'll just look it up and it's like,
They all sound the same. I feel like they're speaking gibberish when they start, like, saying names. I'm like, I don't know who that is.
It's like, just, like, the entry. There's hundreds and hundreds of pages same. About a guy that's just got a name in there. Mm-hmm. It's like, and then you're just like, oh, so he's this or this, and you're clicking on this, and it's like, there's, again, just it's so overflowing with information, you know. It's like, it's just, again, it's like Dungeons & Dragons. Like, any little, the littlest minutia of Dungeons & Dragons spills into a million other mechanics. It seems like this whole world is so robust that you start learning about one thing, and then you just end up just trying to piece together all of it all at once. It's fascinating, yeah.
But I think everything, like, everywhere, all at once.
I think it, like, it does have one or two just, like, really small, like, most just interaction between two characters that it pulls off really successfully. Like, you're having, like, these big things happening, but then, like, the really small things bring it all together. Like, when Durin and his dad are, like, fighting over whether they're going to give Elrond the Mithril or not, like, they're like, shouting at each other, and at some point you're just like, motherfucking old man, just let him help his friend.
Yeah. And oh, but then there's the scene where the leaf falls down. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's a foreboding moment.
Yeah. He just wanted to help his friend.
He really did. And it makes me, like, love the relationship with Legolas and Gimli. How they just, they're such bros. They really like each other so much. And there's no real, like...
They probably fist bump.
Yeah, like, they're so unalike in every way possible. And yet they just are such good friends. Mm. It's really, you know, it's nice. And it makes you think of that relationship between, you know, Elrond and the dwarf in this series, is that they've kind of got that bond too. And also, people were saying it's poorly written, and I remember hearing that a couple episodes into it, and then I was just intentionally listening to the dialogue, and I was like, why do people think this is poorly
written? I think it's written fine. I can't get invested in any of the characters, because I still don't know who the fuck anyone is, because all their names sound the same.
I mean, here's the thing, dude. It's just like... pause the episode, look them up. And then spend 20 minutes just no,
like,
reading about
I can't remember their names. Like the captain that
Are you watching Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
Hit the pause button. Like, the characters on screen, their names and their character names will appear beneath.
The captain guy
is... Yeah, but still, but I don't feel like I need to do research to figure out who the fuck I'm watching in this show.
The captain guy is Elendil. He's Isildur's dad. And I think they've changed some things, because I think in... Tolkien originally had him set up as he was actually the king of Numenor, as opposed to the captain.
Like, I didn't even know Numenor was a thing before this show. Like, I don't. What the fuck is this place?
No, I don't know that.
I didn't know Southlands was a place different than Middle Earth. Is Southlands in Middle Earth? So I didn't know Middle Earth was a separate thing. I don't know what the fuck happened.
Southlands is essentially what will become Mordor.
So Middle Earth isn't like the planet, like the actual,
it's like a continent, right?
It's the area that a lot of this action takes place in. Like, there's stuff further east, there's stuff further south, there's stuff further north, and if you sail out to the west, you get to where the elves come from. I forget the name of it.
There, where the eternal resting place of them.
Valinor. You get to Valinor.
They say it's like the eternal resting place. Can they not come back? Because they came from there in the first place,
right? And they didn't go they weren't like.
It sounds like they're dying when they go back to Valinor. Okay, like, are these people dead? Like,
essentially a one-way trip when you go back, though.
Maybe you're not allowed to leave when you go back. But they're not actually from there. The original elves actually were hatched. They sprang up out of the ground in Middle Earth. Not like sprang up out of the ground, but they were...
First scene, they were in a different place. They weren't in Middle Earth.
So, Middle Earth, like, the elves were the first, like... like, actual, like, native, like, humanoid-type creatures in Middle-earth. Like, before dwarves, before, like, human beings, before, like, hobbits and stuff. Elves were there first.
So this is the Lord of the Rings podcast.
But, okay, this is really fuzzy, but I have, like, listened to, like, some podcasts and YouTube videos explaining the history of this shit. When the, not the, but the, God, it wasn't a planet at the time. It became a planet. Neither, it didn't have a sun either. God, fuck! this is like getting into some X-Men shit. What we were talking about before with like the allegory for God, angels, other deities, things like that, they actually like left God. They left that place and they came to what would become the plane of existence where Middle Earth would occupy.
Like Arda, you mean?
Arda, I think, yeah, Arda, I think...
Arda is the name for, like, the world.
Right, Arda is the world, yes. So they came to Arda, and they were the only, like, sentient people inhabiting it. They had some wars with each other, specifically with Morgoth, because he's an ass. And they left, they went to one side of Arda, and like, that, this is our place now, this is where we're going to live, and things are going to be great. And then elves started appearing on Middle Earth, and the deities who were living there already are like, hey, we like you, you're cool, come live with us. And that's when they went to
Valinor. Okay, and then by the events of Rings of Power, like, that first scene where you see Galadriel as a kid, are they in Valinor? Or...
Yes.
Okay. So they leave Valinor to come back to Middle-earth for some reason or another.
Because Morgoth starts world-threatening.
Okay. So they gotta deal with that fucker.
So they gotta deal with Morgoth.
But apparently, if they go back to Valinor, they can't also come back. So it makes it sound like they're dying. Because isn't that where Frodo and them go at the end of the movie?
Yes.
Like, they go to Valinor, which is, like, where they can, like, live forever for some reason.
I don't know.
Like, it sounds like Valinor is, like, fucking heaven. Like, this is where we go when we kick it.
It's where you go to live with the gods. Yeah, so
I remember reading that, and yeah, that's...
What the fuck? That's what it sounds like. That's
what happens with Legolas and Gimli as well. They take this same journey.
Yeah, they eventually go to Valinor, and that's where they're going to be forever.
Yeah,
like, eventually, it sounds like they're dying.
Eventually, like, just about everybody who is in the Fellowship ends up going there, except for some notable exceptions. Like, the other three hobbits don't end up going there.
And Billy Killy. No, Sam goes. Samwise, yeah? Eventually, because he was briefly a ring bearer, so he goes at some point. But it was years after Frodo goes.
But then, Merry and Pippin don't end up going, and neither does Sean Bean, for obvious reasons.
It's just weird, because I remember watching this movie, and I was like, sad. It's like, why are they going? They're going to be gone forever.
I don't know if Viggo Mortensen ends up going.
It sounds like they're dying.
Because, like, to get back to your question, like, who is Elendil and Isildur? Isildur is the son of the king of Numenor, who cuts the ring, and then Aragorn is a descendant of him.
Oh, okay. So something happens in Numenor.
A giant amount of time is going to pass between this and what,
like, thousands
of years. There are three ages, essentially, and this is sort of the start of the second age, is what the series is about.
Okay.
Of course, like, Fellowship of the Rings.
Do they make the rings in the fucking first season here?
Yes.
Okay, so they are starting to make some
of them. They'll make some of them, yeah. Like, the dwarves make three, I think the elves make five, and the man makes nine. Yeah.
Elves
are three.
I think the elves will end up making
elves are
all
three,
of them.
Dwarves are five.
Seven. And then man gets the most. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah.
Which, yeah, it's just, I don't know. This is fucking headache.
I mean, it's probably like, imagine if all you ever played was like Let's Go Eevee, and then someone told you how all of the information you now know about Pokemon, but the only thing you would ever play is Let's Go Eevee. It's probably like, I imagine there's just so much supplemental material that describes the world that it's built in. And I'm surprised about that, because don't you love Long-Winded? You like your Brandy Sandy books that are like 800 pages.
I like the Brandy Sandy books. I like D&D. I like games with story. Like,
this is all like a derivative of Tolkien.
But for some reason, like, Lord of the Rings always just felt bland to me. Like, it's just kind of like this was vanilla. It's like vanilla, and like all the other stuff that I play is like them adding flavor to it. Like, this is like the baseline of fantasy is Lord of the Rings.
I mean,
like, this is what, like, this is where you start your fantasy, and then you build off this. Like, that's what Lord of the Rings always felt to me. Not like its own amazing thing. It's just kind of like, this is bland. This is
huge, rich history. You remember, like, years and years ago, or like back before, like, the prequels. When the prequels, the Star Wars prequels, it's like started coming out, and like George was like, oh, I've always had like this big story planned ahead, and I had to like cut it down, and I mean, you got these three movies, and now I got to tell the whole thing. Like, no, you fucking didn't. You're a liar. You're making this up as you go, because you suck. Tolkien actually did have this all planned out.
Yeah. It was good for him. It probably was a D&D campaign.
Hey, we fucking C.S. Lewis and whoever else was there, like, playing this D&D campaign.
Yeah, just playing this D&D campaign. Like, you know, we should make a book on this. Yeah. Like, every fucking DM.
It's like, no, Lewis, you can't have a talking lion. That's a stupid idea.
It's my familiar. Come on, guys.
All right, I think we're going to do
that. That would make me so happy if Aslan started out as a familiar in D&D campaigns. God.
Hey, you know what? It's the best kind of familiar. Jesus.
Up next is the poke show.
So maybe we need to reshuffle, though, because we do have a new Pokemon game coming out.
We do. We can either do a poke show. Well, it's like the 18th middle of the month. So we can do like a poke show where we're discussing what we know about what's coming out, what we hope is coming out. We could do something like that. No? You don't seem excited about that at all.
I don't know. I think we've kind of dissected Pokemon as much as we could to this point.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah. I'm honestly at the point where I'm actively avoiding the new information. So it's like, you know, if I see a Pokemon that's in the game, I'm not spoiled by it. But, you know, I kind of just want to see this one on its own terms and see what I think of it.
You know, it did strike me as interesting watching that that 14-minute presentation they did a couple weeks ago. When you are going around in the world, like, if another trainer sees you, it's not like an automatic battle. You actually have to engage with them in order to initiate a battle. Mm-hmm. Which to me is interesting for things like...
Well, you just want to ask directions. Like, hey, am I supposed to go this way? Battle me! You're like, oh, fuck. Like,
yeah, if you want to know where to go, you got to fight.
Yeah.
But I think it's, like, an interesting idea for things like a Nuzlocke. So you can, like, actively choose, like, what you're engaging with. Probably makes it a lot safer when you're doing a Nuzlocke. Because, and in some Nuzlockes, they're just unavoidable battles that you have to get through.
Yeah, because we're definitely Nuzlocking in this game.
At some point, yeah.
Not initially.
No. I'm just going to play for fun the first time. Get my ghost dog. Get a team of 6 ghost dogs.
Very nice.
I'm going to rock the starter from beginning to end. You guys don't do that, but I'm going to rock the starter beginning to end.
Don't do it often. I did in Sword Shield. I stuck with my starter. Mm. So I'm thinking, though, we do a mini show. We'll discuss Lord of the Rings for another half hour.
Okay, Doug. Yeah, you can finish the series and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm thinking we go to a mini show and then skip to the retro show.
Okay.
In a couple weeks. And then at that point, Pokemon will be out and we can have a Pokemon show.
We kind of just discuss our initial thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, yeah. If the feelings are going to be warm and fuzzy, it's going to be great.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. We have a plan.
I can't wait for another Pokemon.
We're 3 weeks away.
Oh, I can't wait.
Here we go.
I can't fucking wait. Which one are you guys getting?
Scarlet.
Yeah, I guess I'll do the other one then, I guess. I don't even know what the difference is. I think I still have to look that up.
I'm doing Violet.
Okay.
I hope I don't get the cruddy gems like I did with Sword.
I don't know that... are they going to like remix the gems and have like version exclusives?
Yeah, because like, you had the Ghost and Ice and Shield, but Sword has the Rock and Fighting. I'm like, that's boring as fuck.
You get to fight Bruno 2 times.
Oh, great.
I don't know if they're going to remix the gym.
One shot my bug team and my bug run.
But it is interesting, like the in the trailer, I don't want to overexpose Ryan to too much information here, but like, not only do you have like gym fights, but you actually have like the
treasure hunting.
The enemy team, like fortresses, and they're battles that you got to do in order to like take, and like there's some of them are themed, like here's are the opposing team, and this one's like a fire themed fortress. So you got to take them out with, you know.
I'm on board. I'm
yeah.
My body is ready. Let's go.
It's going to be good. And then we'll, I don't know, we'll do a show after that one. That's it. That's the end.
So we're all home.
See ya.